strictly 15 minutes each, including discussion. Please try to follow it. The first will be given by Dr. Duchenko, microscopic mechanism of spontaneous polarization in strontium hexafluorides. So the floor is yours.
Good day, dear colleagues. I would like to present for your attention our work, which was made in collaboration with my colleagues from Republic of Belarus. And it's devoted to investigation of the microscopic mechanism of spontaneous polarization in strontium hexafluorides. Strontium hexafluorides as well as barium hexafluorides have been discovered in the middle of past century, and these materials have unique functional properties such as large magnetocrystalline anisotropy, high Curie temperature, and high electrical resistivity. Materials have excellent chemical stability and good corrosion resistivity. As a result, materials have received a wide technical application as permanent magnets and magnetic recording media and microwave devices. Moreover, materials are able to absorb centimeter and decimeter radio waves. And in modern world, we have a problem with electromagnetic pollution. Therefore, hexafluorides can be used for absorption and protecting for absorption electromagnetic pollution and protect electric devices. Our interest to investigation of these materials is associated with relatively recent discovery of ferroelectric properties. And the real reasons of appearance of these ferroelectric properties is still not clear. As we can see, when the external field is equal to zero, we observe the appearance of spontaneous polarization. But in order to describe the crystal structure of hexafluorides, as rule used, centrosymmetric space group, and this contradicts to appearance of ferroelectric properties in these materials. In order to solve this contradiction, Chinese scientists proposed the presence of one distorted oxygen octahedron inside of a unit cell of these materials. Another explanation has been proposed by Japanese scientists. They supposed that appearance of ferroelectric properties is a result of appearance non-collinear magnetic structure. And one more explanation has been proposed by Mihaykin, who supposed that we have to use a little another space group in order to describe this crystal structure. Therefore, the main aim of our work is ascertain reasons and microscopic mechanism of appearance of ferroelectric properties in strontium hexafluorides, partially substituted with indium ions. Therefore, we have synthesized a few samples with different concentration of indium ions. All samples have been fabricated by conventional solid-state method. In our work, we have used ponderomotive method and superconducting quantum interferometer. We have measured ferroelectric properties, and we analyzed crystal structure of hexafluorides using neutron diffraction methods with constant wavelengths and time of light diffraction method. This slide shows the temperature dependence of specific magnetization. As we can see, the substitution of magnetic iron ions leads to destruction of interaction between magnetic sublattices. As a result, the Curie temperature monotonically decreased as the concentration of indium ions increases. This slide shows the dependence of specific magnetization versus external magnetic field. And we have found here interesting properties. The coercive force increases as the ambient temperature is increased. As a rule, for magnetic materials, this is unusual behavior, but this is a feature of hexafluorides. And in the framework of Weiss theory, it can be explained as a result of increasing of size of magnetic domains with increasing temperature. Considering our system as as ensemble with weakly interacting uniaxial monodomain particles with hexagonal structure and the law of approach saturation, we have calculated a constant of magnetic anisotropy and these values are comparable with previously published by other scholars, and we observe dependence of coefficient of magnetic anisotropy versus temperature. And this slide shows the ferroelectric loops that tells us about that our material is paraelectric. And as I said above, we have not explanation the reason of this appearance of ferroelectric properties in these materials. Therefore, we have made analysis of our structural data. Our data show it that we have homogeneous materials. We have not observed additional diffractional peaks, and means that the appearance of non-collinear magnetic structure is absent in our materials. And we observe increasing of lattice parameters as the concentration of indium ions is increased. It means that a part of magnetoactive ions have been substituted by indium ions, which have larger ionic radii. This slide shows the temperature dependence of lattice parameters, and in the low temperature region, we have observed a region where lattice parameters insignificantly changed as the ambient temperature is increased. And such behavior can be explained by non-equal distortion of neighboring oxygen excitons. As I said, in order to explain appearance of ferroelectric properties or spontaneous polarization in our materials, we analyzed crystal structure of our materials, but we have made a refinement of our neutron patterns in the framework of both centersymmetric and non-centersymmetric space groups. It's necessary to note that lattice parameters for both space groups are the same. Therefore, we can just compare structural segments. And, for example, the first structural segment, oxygen octahedron, in the case of center-symmetric space group, this oxygen octahedron located here, here, and here, and it's ideal. It has no distortions. It means that in such oxygen octahedrons, the electrical dipole will be absent. Another situation is observed in the case of non-centersymmetric space group. This oxygen octahedron has distortions, and level of distortions achieve near 5-6%. And this distortion is the result of appearance of electrical dipoles. Another crystallographic position is described. This is a trigonal bipyramid, and in the case of centersymmetric space group, distances between iron ion and apical oxygen octahedrons are equals. It means that electrical dipoles in such crystallographic position should be absent. But in the case of non-centersymmetric space group, distances between iron and upper oxygen ion decreases as the ambient temperature is increased from 1.5 up to 150 Kelvin. After this, distances increases, and it means that electrical dipole, there is in this oxygen polyhedra, can change orientation along C axis. And next crystallographic position for F. In this case, even in the centrosymmetric space group, we observed distortion of this oxygen octahedron. The level of distortion achieves 5-6%. And this distortion is the reason of appearance electrical dipoles. But in the case of non-centrosymmetric space group, we observed the difference in distortion of neighboring oxygen octahedrons. What I mean? Upper oxygen octahedron is more distorted, unlike of its neighbor. The degree of this distortion achieves 9 and even 12% comparing with its neighbor. And this difference in distortions is the reason of appearance of different electrical dipoles. And I suppose that this is the real reason of appearance of spontaneous polarization in these materials. And what I have to say in conclusion. We analyzed a crystal structure of hexaferrites. Hexaferrites can be described very well, quite well, in the framework both centrosymmetric and non-centrosymmetric space group. But non-centrosymmetric space group allows us to explain the appearance of spontaneous polarization of ferroelectric properties, unlike of centrosymmetric. In our experiments, we have not observed a non-collinear magnetic structure. Therefore, we can conclude that our experiments contradict to Japanese scientists' assumption. In our experiments, we observed four distorted oxygen octadons in the case of centrosymmetric space group. And this data contradict to Chinese scientists' assumption. But if we use non-centrosymmetric space group, we can explain the appearance of spontaneous polarization of ferroelectric properties in strontium hexaferrites as a result of unequal distortion of neighboring oxygen octadons. At the end of presentation, I have to say thanks. I would like to thank our colleagues from Barcelona and from Saclay. They helped us to make experiments, and thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much for this really excellent and clear presentation. I wonder whether someone is going to make comments or put questions. I have only one very general one. What was the basic motivation for selecting this kind of hexaferrite? I mean the indium substituted strontium hexaferrite. It's obviously a multiferroic material, which and all multiferric materials may have in principle some applications in certain devices. Do you have such kind of application already in mind, or it was just the general interest?
Thank you for your question. As I said above, the discovery of ferroelectric properties, it was made near 10 years ago. And of course, these materials have very high Curie temperature, near 740 Kelvin. And ferroelectric properties are observed at room temperature. Japanese scientists observed the codependence of electric and magnetic subsystems. Therefore, we can conclude that these materials are perspective multiferroics. Therefore, they are very interesting for us.
Thank you. Yeah, Boris, please.
In the beginning, you mentioned that this material has a very good absorption coefficient for the microwave. In what range of microwaves, and can you characterize this absorption, the coefficient or whatever?
I cannot tell you about coefficient, but as I said, they absorb centimeter and decimeter radio waves. This is
Thank you. Professor Hartmut Fuss.
You tried to refine the structure in the centric and the eccentric space group. But did you make a decision finally? What space group did you choose?
In real, we just tried to test a few different assumptions. What is the reason of appearance of ferroelectric properties? As I say, Chinese scientists supposed that this is the reason that ferroelectric properties is a result of presence only one distorted oxygen octadons. Japanese scientists supposed that this is a result of appearance of non-collinear magnetic structure. And we showed that this non-centrosymmetric space group allows us to explain the appearance of spontaneous polarization as a result of non-equal distortions of neighboring oxygen octadons. Therefore, we just make test these different space groups.
Thank you so much once again. And let me announce the next speaker. The next scientific report will be given by Dr. Artsumayan, ultra-sensitive detection of analyte molecules at octomolar concentrations by Raman spectroscopy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, everybody. The topic of my presentation is completely in the line of the research topic, research team we are doing at the sector of Raman spectroscopy at the FLMP. This is the outline of my talk after the brief introduction to the developing of biosensing techniques. I would present to your attention two topics. One of them is the highly sensitive detection of human lactoferrin by surface enhanced Raman scattering, and the other one is silver tree dendrites nanostructure for atomolar limit of analyte molecule detections. By the way, in both of these topics, we achieved the level of detection very high. It's on the level of atomolar limit, though the ways were a little bit different, and I will comment on them. So briefly about the biosensing techniques, certainly there are some requirements, some criteria for biosensing studies, including non-invasive and sensitive tests for early diagnostics. Really for early diagnostics, to my own opinion, you need to have a very sensitive technique to find out some pathology and so on. Very important point is accuracy and reliability to reduce the risk of false results. Of course, medical diagnostics of different types of dangers of human health and so on. Presently, I would like to mention that along with the well-known enzyme-linked immunoassay known as ELISA and high-performance liquid chromatography, Raman spectroscopy also has been considered as a powerful and very sensitive tool for biosensing as well. It could be seen from this list of advantages, and first of all, I would like to mention very high sensitivity of this vibrational spectroscopy in the options of the enhanced Raman spectroscopy. It could be, of course, also non-invasive probing, which could be controlled by the laser power and the wavelength of the laser excitation. Another important advantage is a short-term analysis, a few seconds or maybe minutes, not more. There are some more advantages, but I will not stop on them, but I would like to mention the major limitation of the spontaneous Raman scattering. It's a weak signal, only one photon out of 10 to 6, 10 to 7 photons are scattered to Raman, but there are ways to overcome this limit. For this, there are some well-known options of enhanced Raman scattering. You can see from this diagram that for the spontaneous Raman, the cross-section for bioorganic molecules is very low, about 10 to minus 30. But using enhanced options like CARS, surface enhanced Raman scattering, resonance Raman scattering, you can enhance Raman. You can enhance Raman to the level of the single molecular detection. Today I will speak mainly about the surface enhanced Raman scattering, which implies the placement of the analyte molecules on the surface of the noble nanoparticles like silver and gold. And there are two main mechanisms of the surface enhancement in this way, in this option. One of them is electromagnetic. It's a dominant enhancement factor due to the collective oscillations of plasmons, free electrons. And the important point here is the surface plasmon resonance. I mean, in the case, the frequency of the plasmons are coincide with the laser excitation wavelength. You have a resonance position. And in this resonance position, you can enhance your Raman signal to the level of T2A, T2-12, even more, achieving the level of the single molecule detection. The other factor is the chemical, which is much weaker, of course, but it also takes place in some cases, and it is due to the charge transfer, electron transfer between the metal and your molecule states. And in some cases, this enhancement can bring to 10 to 3, 10, even 10 to 4 factor of enhancement. So coming to the main text part of my presentation, I would like to say that for the SERS spectroscopy, the proteins, lipids are very attractable subjects for the investigation and biosensing, and I will tell you about the lactoferrin, which is one of the components of the human immune system and is a part of the innate defense. Very briefly about the materials and methods. First of all, I would like to mention that the fabrication, the developing and the fabrication of these SERS active substrates were done in Belarus Republic in close cooperation, of course, with us. So as for these SERS active substrates, we were using the porous silicon layers. The parameters are written here. You can see them. And we were using the silver immersion deposition on these silver porous substrates. You can see the corresponding same images here, the top one and the cross section. So the dominating size of the silver nanoparticles are in this range, 10 to 150 nanometers. However, some of them, they have diameters much larger, up to 700 nanometer. Now the results. You can see the SERS. We started from the concentration 10 to minus 6 mol, just to probe these substrates. You can see here two Raman spectra. This is just for the substrate without the analyte molecule, and here is the same substrate with the analyte molecules at this concentration. And you can see the Raman peaks for the lactoferrin, and the Raman bands and the corresponding assignment are shown in the table. We were using in this particular case the short wavelength laser at 473 nanometers and modest power, about 1.5 milliwatt. So next, we will revealing the minimal detectable concentration of the lactoferrin molecules on this porous silicon substrate. You can see the integrated spectrum starting from 10 to minus 6 up to 10 minus 11. These spectra were obtained by the collection and integration of the SERS spectra maps. But there are some very interesting and specific features, peculiarities of the spectra, and let me briefly comment on them. First of all, I would like to say that we noticed that the Raman spectra at the low concentration, 10 to minus 6 up to 10 minus 10, is rather low, but starting from the 10 to minus 10 and lower to 10 to minus 14, 15, the Raman spectra was enhanced, enormously enhanced. Usually it should be vice versa. Lower the concentration, lower are the peaks, Raman bands. But as you can see, in this case, it's not so. It's not so, and this is because we found out that the lactoferrin exists, including our organism, in two phases, in tetramer and monomer forms. And it is concentration dependent. At the concentration below 10 to minus 10, you have monomers mainly, dominantly, and they are converted to tetramers at the concentrations above 10 to minus 9 and 10 to minus 10. Approximately 10 to minus 10 is the border. So what happens? Happens the following. So tetramers are large in size, therefore they're lying in the nanostructures, not completely, so the electromagnetic field was unable to excite this long tetramer molecules completely, especially at the top part of the molecules. But when the concentration was down to 10 minus 10 and less, you have monomer size, and the excitation was completely for these molecules. Therefore, you can see here the growth of the Raman spectra, the main bands of the lactoferrin. When coming to the concentration about 10 to minus 14, 10 to minus 16, here normally the Raman spectra was decreased, I mean the intensity of the peaks, and at the concentration of 10 to minus 18, we don't have Raman spectra, Raman bands for the lactoferrin. We can see only two peaks attributed to the amorphous carbon. Nevertheless, we decided to overcome this limit, the limit of 10 to minus 16, and covered our CERS active substrate with analyte molecules with the graphene layer, which works as a heat sink somehow and protect it from the thermal damage of the analyte molecule. As you can see from the spectrum, it works. And we succeeded to detect the concentration 10 to minus 18 with most main Raman bands for lactoferrin. This was published last year in Biosensors. And let me pass to the second topic, it's silver tree dendrites. During the first studies with lactoferrin, we noticed that in some special points, we have a very strong Raman signal, and by careful investigation of these points, we understand that there are some dendrite structures. And we ask our Belarusian colleagues to probe to develop enriched developed dendrite structures for CERS spectroscopy. They did it very successfully, and there are two strong advantages of the dendrite structures. One of them is the excitation upon a wide range of laser wavelength, including infrared. It's very important. And the other one is the rich number of hot spots in this developed dendritic structure. Among our objectives was to extend the range of excitation to the near-infrared region because the majority of the Raman spectroscopy is doing at the 600 at red, green, or blue lasers, but near-infrared excitation has advantages. They are listed here. The photon energy is lower, therefore it eliminates the analyte destruction. It can quench the luminescence, which is going parallel, accompanying the Raman scattering, and to avoid contribution from tissue media that is transparent in this region. Again, let me show you briefly the materials and methods implemented in this study. In this case, we used also porous silicon, but not but macroporous silicon. You can see the structure here. This is on the flat surface of silicon template, and this is the same pictures on the macroporous silicon template. You can see the enriched developed branches of the dendrites here in comparison with the flat one. We measured, of course, the reflection spectra to understand what kind of... yes, just 2 minutes, yes? I think I have 2 minutes.
2 minutes.
2 minutes, yes, I will be very brief. So we measured this reflecting spectra and understand that we can use the excitation 785. As an analyte molecule, we use this mercaptophenyl boronic acid, which have, by the way, small Raman cross-section. We measured and compared the CERS spectra for the flat and porous silicon at 633 and 785 and found out that this excitation is more preferable and more stronger Raman bands. Then we went to the detection limit for the 4 MPBr molecules and achieved the detection limit for 10 to minus 16. Here at the excitation wavelength of 785, I would like to stress on this. And eventually we probed this porous silicon SERS-active substrates on the other analyte molecules, DTMB acid. And here we achieved again the atomolar detection limit here, and you can see here the spectrum here. Also on the right part of the slide, you can see the Raman maps for two different concentration, 10 to minus 6 here. Almost in all points, you can see the Raman peaks. But for the concentration of 10 to minus 18, there is only one point indicating the DTMB molecules. So this study was also finished partially. The one part is already published in the Journal of Applied Physics. The other part is being prepared almost for the submission in the nearest months, maybe in March or April. So this is the summary on lactoferrin. I will stress only here to decrease the temperature in the laser spot below the temperature of lactoferrin denaturation, the analyte molecules were protected with graphene, which allowed detecting lactoferrin at atomolar concentration. And to our knowledge, a reliable SERS study to lactoferrin molecules has not been reported before. And the last slide, summary of argentum dendrites nanostructures. With the use of these dendrites on macroporous silicon, it was possible for the first time to detect 4 MPBI and DTPA molecules with very low concentration, 10 to minus 16 and 10 to minus 18 respectively. And discovered increasing the intensity of the peaks for nanostructure on macroporous silicon is associated with a wide band of plasma resonance characteristic of our silver dendrites and with the presence of large number of hot spots. Thank you for your attention. That's all.
Thank you very much and congratulations to your results with this really ultimately sensitive methods. One question, please. Pavel.
Thank you. Very short.
Yes.
10 to the minus 10 is something like 1 microgram per 10 kilos. How you control the concentrations?
The controlling the concentration is not hard a job. So you are starting to prepare your concentration at a high level, 10 to minus 2. You are taking 10 to minus 2 by Y because you have to, firstly, you have to measure the spontaneous Raman spectra. And then you are starting to divide this concentration, in this case, by two orders of magnitude, going 10 to minus 4, 6, etc., etc., etc. Well, of course, some mistake could be there, but when you are achieving the level of 10 to minus 18, 10 to minus 16, the mistake couldn't be very high. It could be, I don't know, maybe 2 or so. Not an order of magnitude, at least.
Thank you very much once again.
Thank you.
And let me call the next presentation that will be given by Dr. Shkurinov. Superconductor spintronics based on Josephson nanostructures. So the floor is yours, Yuri. Shkurinov.
Thank you very much. And that one for switching. Just a minute. Which one? I can turn this one. Start by just by this one. Only this. So in laser, yeah? Okay, yeah. Thank you very much. I'll start. So my talk is devoted to the interaction of superconductivity and ferromagnetism. So I will talk about superconductor junctions and show some interesting features to my mind. Yeah. first, shortly about Josephson effect. So you have a two superconductor, and you have some insulator between them. So what is brings to? It brings to the to Josephson relation between superconducting current and phase difference between these materials, and voltage and derivative of phase difference on time. So it brings to some relation between frequency and voltage, and it uses the voltage standard. So today, the most precise voltage standard based on Josephson junctions. Yeah. What would be if we put here instead of insulator ferromagnet? Ferromagnet is antagonistic phenomena to the superconductivity because it destroys copper pairs. Yeah, copper pairs with opposite spin, but if you turn one of them, superconductivity destroyed. Sometimes, but sometimes not. So I will talk about what happens here, what kind of new features we found here. This is a different applications for Josephson junctions. Yeah, I just put. And this is a phi zero junction. So we have a two superconductor and ferromagnet, but ferromagnet with a non-center symmetric, where we have an broken inversion symmetry. This leads to the relation that Josephson energy is proportional to the cosinus phi minus phi zero. And phi zero is related to magnetic moment of the ferromagnet. So then you, we do numerical simulations, modeling. So we need to solve Landau-Lifshitz-Gilbert equations to determine the dynamics of the magnetic moment by superconducting current. So we have a superconducting current interact with a ferromagnet with this. And so then we can have a dynamical description of the system, description of the dynamics of the system. So in general, we have five equations, three for Landau-Lifshitz-Gilbert, for Josephson, and the Josephson relation between voltage and phase. So we need to solve them, and then we can find the time dependence of the component, time dependence of voltage, time dependence of phase. So this is one example. We can do, of course, we cannot do analytics here, but we can do some approximations. Yeah. And here shown that at when G is a relation between Josephson energy and magnetic energy. So when this relation is a small, and then magnetization component in small, then we can get the dynamical expressions for derivative. Yeah. And if we put these expressions for superconducting current, we can find the new phenomena here. So it brings to appearance of the a term which does not depend on time. Such things is known as a Shapiro step for IV characteristics of the Josephson junctions. And here we found that appears the same term which is proportional to this relation between Josephson energy and the magnetic energy dissipation parameter, damping, and spin orbit interaction. So here we have an eigenmodel as a so we have here ferromagnetic resonance. When Josephson frequency approaches this ferromagnetic resonance frequency, so after that we have a manifestation of this resonance on the IV characteristics. Here I plot the superconducting current as a bias current, and we can see maximum here. This is actually related to this term which we obtained here. And this is a comparison of the analytics and the numerical. This blue one is numerical. So additionally, we have some peak here, but this is resonance frequency. And this is a peak on the relation between this formula and the numerics on the superconducting current. This is a magnetic moment. This is a superconducting current. We can see very good correspondence between numerics and analytical approximation here. Of course, we investigated very detailed resonance features here. What happens when we change the this relation between Josephson and magnetic energy, and when we change the spin orbit constant parameter. And actually, this might suggest a method for determination of the spin orbit parameter in non-center symmetric ferromagnets. This is an effect of damping. We have a damped resonance here. one of the question, what happens with the dynamics when we go along the IV characteristic? This is the usual IV characteristic for Josephson junctions. What happens here? So we can see very complex behavior at different value of current. So even chaotic behavior, but surprisingly, we found a very simple forms, very simple dynamics, regular dynamics at some point of IV characteristics here. If we irradiate by electromagnetic radiation here, electromagnetic field at some frequency, we can see inside of the Shapiro step, this system became, this dynamics is actually forced by Shapiro step, locking phenomena, and we have a one type of oscillations. We can change the along the IV characteristic, transformations of such trajectories, and even we have some topological from left mushroom to the right mushroom trajectories, yeah, we call here. So one of the phenomena which is known, I think I can press it here, how to do here, can I do it? Press, who can help me? No? Sorry. I want to show the animation here, yeah? And if I click on here, will it? Okay, if I click here, no animation, yeah? Okay, can you? You should press on this one. There is no mouse, yeah? Okay, maybe I will explain by words. Later, okay. Here, you started, yeah? So, started, how to switch on? No? So, yeah, I'm very sorry. So, it's a very famous Kapitsa pendulum phenomena. If we oscillate the suspension point of the mount. Okay. No, it's okay. Yeah. Okay, so stability point is change. So the question, can we do, because we have a superconducting current, so we have oscillating systems, oscillating action on the So we can change the stability point of the pendulum. And if you oscillate vertically, so you have a two stability points. If you oscillate in horizon direction, so after that you might have a stability point with some angle. Okay, yeah. So this is just a show magnetization moment here, magnetic moment here, changing the G parameter here. Changing G parameter, we can see different value for MY. So we can change the easy axis of the magnetic moment by superconducting current, I'm stressing. Yeah. Here, this is a visual stability point on this diagram, changing G as well, yeah? And this is correspondence between analytics and numerics, and we can see at small value of G, correspondence at different frequencies is rather well. Another system, if we consider usual superconductor, insulator, superconductor, and put magnetic some nanomagnet here around it, then we can see the same feature. So changing the coupling between phase and the magnetic moment of nanomagnet, we can see as well changing the easy axis of the nanomagnet. One question we investigated, reversal, magnetization reversal of this system. I mean phi zero junction. So we can, by superconducting current, yeah, changing or apply the pulse, we can rotate magnetic moment of the superconductor from plus to minus. And this is shown by this pulse. We can do use a pulse, not a rectangular, but for example Gaussian form, and we can see as well magnetization reversal by superconducting current in this SFS phi zero junction. Another phenomenon which we found very interesting, we are describing it now, it's related to appearance of the periodic bands here. We see existence of magnetization reversal, disappearance, existence, disappearance. So interesting phenomena, which is we can do some for if, for example, someone will arrange the practical applications for that, it should take into account, because changing parameters might bring to the appearance or disappearance magnetization reversal. This is another type, so here spin orbit coupling, and here a relation between Josephson and magnetic energy. And recently, a very famous group from Spain, they use our method for magnetization reversal, and they suggested cryogenic memory element based on the anomalous Josephson junctions, actually on phi zero junction. Yeah. So they propose detail how to do first magnetization reversal and then how to read this information. So this is a SQUID, superconducting quantum interference device. So after that, if you can see here, this is a critical current as a function of magnetic moment. You can see in this direction, it point is here, and SQUID show that this is a correspond to different orientation of ferromagnetic moment. So such opportunity appears, such possibility appears in this system. So my conclusion that anomalous, oh, sorry. Fortunately, at the end, too excited, yeah, sorry. So this is actually a conclusion concerning that really this system, superconductor, ferromagnetic superconductor, has a very hot topic today. In particular, we can arrange the phase battery. So you know that phase of wave functions, yeah, usually cannot be measured, but we can measure phase difference between two superconductors. And in phi zero junction, you have a phi zero, which is a current is a not zero if phase difference is zero due to coupling to magnetic moment. So such opportunities to arranging phase battery now discussed in the literature. So thank you very much. This is my short talk about this is our results.
Thank you very much. Questions, comments? Does not seem to be the case. So let me thank you once again for this excellent presentation. And the rest of the session will be devoted to contributions from the Pyarov Laboratory. The first will be given by Dr. Vladimir Skuratov. TEM examination of the ceramics irradiated with heavy ions of fission fragments energies. So, Volodyets, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, everybody. Aim of my presentation is to give a brief review on our recent result demonstrated how transmission electron microscopy was used to characterize radiation damage produced by high energy heavy ions. As you may know, our institute still have no transmission electron microscopy, and the experimental base of this collaborative work is a microscopic facility in Center for High-Resolution Transmission Electron Microscopy in South Africa, and accelerators producing heavy ions of fission fragment energy in our lab and in Kazakhstan. Usually, radiation resistance of solids against swift heavy ions is associated with ability of formation of so-called latent tracks. That's why practically all experimental work in this direction focuses on determination of latent track morphology, cell size, and threshold for, say, formation. It should be noted that only transmission electron microscopy is a direct technique which allow observe radiation damage as well as any structural changes. So I will give an example how this technique was used for evaluation of latent track parameters in some materials which are of considerable practical interest for many applications, for example, for simulation of fission fragment radiation damage in radiation resistant insulator. First of all, I would like to demonstrate microscopic images of aluminium oxide where latent tracks were found out of radiation with xenon ions. One can see the tracks remain crystalline. There is no any phase transitions. The tracks are discontinuous, and the combination of microscopic approach and the molecular dynamic simulation allowed us to reproduce a fine structure of ion track ranges, as well as find to radial density of isolated track region. This is really important for verification of existing theoretical models of track formation. We found, studied the dose dependence of number of tracks. We found that number is saturates, which stimulated additional work demonstrated following effects. If heavy ions produce tracks in close vicinity to previous one, one can observe partial annealing of damaging structure, which also was proved by molecular dynamic simulations. And another interesting achievement was made as combination of microscopic measurement and computer simulation is the role of recrystallization during track formation processes. In same materials, one can see that practically no any radiation damage along of ion trajectory, for example, in magnesium oxide, while in other materials like sapphire, track are discontinuous, and in some materials the track are fully amorphous. It's also very important for elaboration of microscopic models of track formation. Another big work was done on studies of dose of dependence of track size on electron stopping power levels. Why so big attention to this work? Because track size and the threshold of track formation are the only parameters which can be used for verification of track formation models. Here one can see how track size is increased with increasing of specific ionizing energy loss in yttrioaluminio garden single crystals. Some work was done on silicon nitride, which is really attractive and show for promise for various nuclear applications, especially for SNR matrix fuel hose for utilizing of minor actinides. We studied latent tracks in a broad range of ion fluence, and first we registered isolated tracks, then tracks in partially amorphized matrix, and finally we registered amorphous tracker in amorphized matrix. This result was achieved for the first time, and one can see here the proof by using selected area diffraction pattern. In more detail, it was done using Wismut ions, which produced highest, practically highest possible for monatomic particles electronic stopping power, and also one can see isolated track, then partially overlapping tracks, and finally amorphous track and amorphized matrix. It's interesting image demonstrate amorphous latent tracks in amorphous matrix with some crystalline remains. We studied also tracks in amorphous materials in nanocrystalline silicon nitride, and there is a big difference in latent track size, which we still can't explain. Additional and very important information can be found from analysis of isolated ion track region. Here one can see a radial density profile of single ion tracks. One can see the decrease in density on axis of latent tracks and over dense region surrounding track core. As you know, in the same materials, any ion shift, heavy ion impact led to production of surface defects, so-called hillock. Till now, this very specific radiation damage were studied mainly using atomic force microscopy, and we were the first group who applied transmission electron microscopy for evaluation of latent tracks and hillocks in ceramic materials. Here one can see rutile crystals radiated with xenon ions, and nice hillocks are observed in the surface of these crystals. Very interesting results are given here. One can see if we radiate a thin target, we observe hillocks on entry and exit point of the crystal. This is really interesting for simulation of fission fragment impact when a lot of fission fragments exit from nuclear fuel pellets. I very like this nice image demonstrated in high resolution fine structure of hillock on the surface of a titanium dark size. It's also very interesting information can be extracted from such image demonstrated on atomic level, the fine structure of hillocks. Here one can see the temperature dependence of hillock parameters after irradiation with 220 MeV xenon ions. It's seen that hillock size is strongly increased with the irradiation temperature, that is in good agreement in so-called thermal spike model of latent track formation. Another several example of hillocks on the surface of different materials. In some materials, hillocks are really crystalline, while, for example, in ytterbium garnets, they are fully amorphous. In the simulation of hillock formation processes using molecular dynamics demonstrated as that really hillocks could be formed on entry and exit point of the crystals. And also I would like to emphasize there is quite good agreement between experimental electron microscopy data and molecular dynamic simulation. So, in a brief summary, I would like to emphasize that Latin trach formation can be strongly governed by recrystallization processes in iron trach regions. And of course, spinal defect structure in a large measure is a result of interference of isolated iron trach regions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Volodya. Excellent talk and also kept very short. Questions? Comments? Hartmut, please.
You mentioned the garnet structure, and the garnet structure is very stable. And you said no recovery. Did you heat it up?
When we talk about...
the yak.
Yak. We did not observe any recrystallization. Of course, track during formation, if you will do some snapshots within maybe 10 picosecond, we will see some small decrease in track region size. But track is practically the same like form during the first picosecond time domain.
Yes, but you said no recovery afterwards. The garnet structure has almost no point defects. So if you put defects in, could you heal it out by heating the material up to, say, 500, 600 degrees centigrade?
Of course, we did not study track structure during annealing or during heat treatment. All these data were gathered during this very, very short time domain. We were interested, of course, in track formation.
Yes, please.
Is it recrystallization behind the keeping the size of the track constant during the it length along the track?
Actually not, because we studied very small region along a fine trajectory, maybe only a few tenths of nanometers. Of course, this should be strongly dependent on ionizing energy loss level. First of all, it's practically impossible to do using molecular dynamic simulation in such large scale. But for certain electronic stopping power level, it should work, of course.
Okay.
Yeah, one more question, please.
Volodya, you said that the transmission electron microscopy is the only direct method to investigate Leyden tracks. In what sense is it direct? Why this method is direct and all others are indirect?
Of course, it's not simplicity itself to answer this question, but really, transmission electron microscopy is the only techniques which provide structural information. All other techniques like X-ray diffraction, neutron diffraction, small angle, X-ray scattering also provide important information, but they are not recognized as a direct technique. I don't know the boundary between direct and indirect technique, but in this case, it's definitely for studies of radiation damage materials, only transmission microscopy could be used as for direct observation.
Thank you. Yeah, Hartmut.
It's not a photographic method.
Right, that's true.
Physical interference.
Right.
So, in that sense.
True. Of course, all these images which were shown here is a result of electron diffraction on crystalline structure. It's not really photographs. We understood it.
Further comments, questions? If not, then let me thank you once again, Volodya. And let me call the last scientific report that will be given by Dr. Oleniczak, Structural Modification of Carbon Materials by Swift Heavy Ions. So the floor is yours.
So, good morning, everybody. Thank you, Chairman, for your kind introduction. I would like to present results of cooperative works done with our laboratory and the Rzhanov Institute of Semiconductor Physics, Vinča Institute of Nuclear Science, and Kotelnikov Institute of Radio Engineering and Electronics. Generally, I will continue the similar subjects as in the proceedings talk. I will focus on carbon materials purely. Most of my samples are with sp2 structures. So here is outline of my presentation. I will start from bulk carbon materials, discuss pyrolytic graphite, and in particular highly oriented pyrolytic graphite as a model compound, and some words about glassy carbons. The task of this part would be to investigate the damage response of these materials, which are commonly or are planned to use in a nuclear technology. Second task. Our task was the tailoring of the properties of 2D materials. In particular, I will focus on graphene, so sp2 hybridization, and in its chemically functionalized derivatives like fluorographene and graphene oxide. I will skip the irradiation details because it's a similar subject and was already mentioned. So plenty of works have been done on the irradiation of graphene because of its application in nuclear reactors, but there is only a few work about irradiation with Swift heavy ions. But would like to mention that this subject is becoming more and more important because of the introduction and of the modern new type of nuclear reactors, in which, as you can see, that the carbon materials are planned to play very important and roles, like to attenuate recalling fission products and accommodate all internal gases released, and also protect the silicon carbide layer. So it's becoming more and more important, and in this field it's not only exposed to fluxes of neutrons but also of Swift heavy ions with the energies and masses we can accelerate using IC100 cyclotrons, which can be used for testing this material. So I would like so this is an example of silicon carbide, which is very insensitive to radiation in electronic stopping regime. But as soon as we decrease the energy of the incoming ions, you can observe that it's more and more damage. So for HOPG, we perform plenty of studies with the use of scanning tunneling microscope. The results from this is that damage efficiency is even lower than it was supposed to be. For example, for the irradiation with 167 MeV xenon ions, we observed two types of nanohillocks of two types of damaged zones on the surface. While one type have clearly damaged carbon lattice with the formation of point defects of sizes of 2-3 nanometers, and the second type, you can see that it's here that the lattice is still preserved, not damaged. It is just protrusions. What can be seen from the results of molecular dynamics simulation. At first glance, this may look like an ordinary track in carbon materials, but if you look at the cross-section image, you can see how low is the efficiency of damage formation, that most of the layers are not damaged, and in fact the damage size may be located a few layers below the top layer, causing formation of such protrusions. We combine this scanning electron scanning tunneling microscopy investigation with other spectroscopic techniques. For example, from Auger electron spectroscopy, you can see that with increasing ion dose, we kill the components which are related to pi-pi interaction of interlayer pi-pi interaction, which means that we lowering or causing something which disappears. This interaction, which may be because of two reasons, like increase in interlayer spacing, which we confirm from XRD patterns, and also for from TM cross-section images, you can see the expansion of the layers and this continuous the damage. And other reason may be miscellany of the carbon planes close to the defects, like some of these effects are presented here. For example, this, what we see, this, the scale is just two nanometers, a graphene wrinkle form and the surface of HOPG, so just close to the defects. All these atoms are misaligned, leading to formation of these more patterns, and we further confirm it with Raman spectroscopy, when you can see the formation of, let's say, 2D turbostratic loosely packed misaligned structures that does not obey for multi-wavelength Raman measurements, does not obey well-known relation of Cantador from the determination of crystalline size. Next material is a glassy carbon. It's because of its outstanding mechanical properties and excellent chemical resistance. It is planning to be used in modern molten salt reactors, for example, and as a matrix for disposal solidification of radioactive waste. So in these applications, it would be directly exposed to fission fragments or ions we accelerate. Some models of structure of glassy carbon. So the most contemporary one is the one by Peter Harris, assuming that it's composed of fullerene related structure, so the presence of non-hexagonal member rings. Most of the TM images of such type of carbon samples confirming, but you can also see that for other type, depending of the preparation condition, you can clearly see graphite planes, so closely similar to the very, very old model of Franklin. So this type of carbon material is a non-graphitizable material because it's originates from polymers precursors, so it's twisted to some extent and cannot be transformed to graphite, perfect graphite structure under heater. Our approach was to perform cross-section Raman mapping. This is one image, optical image of one of the specimens with overlapped calculated electronic and nuclear stopping power. And some results. So you can see that samples that were carbonized at very high temperature are extremely resistant to irradiation in electronic stopping power. So this calculation damage profile is almost what you get from assuming only damage due to nuclear energy loss, but as soon as you decrease the carbonization temperature, this material becomes more and more unstable under irradiation of swift heavy ions and can be damaged in the electronic stopping power with formation of SP carbon chains, which will be discussed in somehow more extensively. Regarding nanomaterials, the ion beams can be used for defect engineering that includes, for example, the investigation of the transport properties of the damaged materials, but also to modify the transport properties, for example, for bend gap opening. Other possible application include creation of active or reactive sites for sensing, for chemical functionalization of materials with defects, and creation of nano-sized pores, which can be used for molecular separation, energy storage, and DNA sequencing. For example, in our investigation, we focus on multi-graphene, so multi-layer graphene. In irradiated with swift heavy ions, you can see that here the situation is completely different. So you can observe quite large defects in the uppermost two layers, one or two, two layers. And we also performed some molecular dynamic simulation depending of ion energy. So for high energy ions, we have sputtering of the materials from the center with partial restoration of the edges, while in, for lower energy we have mainly formation of the disorganized or damaged amorphous even tracks. So here what we obtained here you can consider as not a perfect experimental results of this theoretical model prediction and model structures. So if you drill some holes in the graphene, so create anti dots in it, and if it's two-layer structure, so you can close the edges, making it more stable. So the charge carrier are less scattered, and for this structure you have a band gap opening. By performing electrical measurements, electrical characterization, we obtained this kind of behavior experimentally. So for ions for multi-layer graphene irradiated with very energetic ions, we observed the creation of opening of band gap with only little degradation of in carrier mobility, and as from elucidated from by Raman spectroscopy, much lower defect efficiency. Why for these ions with higher energy, we haven't found opening of band gap. The degradation of carrier mobility was much stronger, and there was appearance of charge trapping centers. So a few years ago, it was published a paper on the idea of purification and annealing of graphene with swift heavy ion irradiation. So apparently they use only Raman spectroscopy and show that some defects can be annealed with low dose irradiation. But they use rather low quality materials, and we also confirm this experimentally for low quality material that the sheet resistance can be decreased and hull mobility can be increased.
Sorry, but could you speed up a little bit, because I see that you have still a lot, and okay, you are more or less at the end of your allocated time.
So yes. Thank you. So with this we confirm that it's possible to heal even high quality graphene by annealing of some residual defects with rather light ions, but not possible with heavy high energy ions, because in this case they are formed rather the damage zones are about 20 nanometers seen here as a black holes. Our last idea is localize the functionalizations of a recovery of graphene structures from chemically functionalized derivatives like fluorographene and graphene oxide. So this idea gives us a possibility to engineer conductive and isolating regions. To date, plenty of methods were used, but the unique feature of this of swift heavy ions is the possibility of highly localized energy deposition and highly localized structure modification. So we intended to employ this unique feature to create nanometer sized deoxygenated or reduced or defunctionalized regions, which can be considered like quantum dots, or if we use ions with extremely high electronic stopping power, we can create some damage inside of even holes and create what can be considered like couple quantum dot and anti-dot. So first material is a fluorographene, so with irradiation dose increases irradiation dose, we were able to remove fluoride atoms, which was our task. And this was accompanied with significant increase in the conductivity, both measured in lateral and vertical directions, so few orders of magnitude increase. And on the capacity voltage characteristics, we discovered capacity peaks and with characteristic frequency behavior that is characteristic for quantum dots. And we estimated the size of 1.4 to 4 nanometers. This is ion track created in fluorographene, so amorphous region, I say, in disorganized materials, but with some partial reconstruction of the crystalline structure on close to the edges. Similar effects we observe for graphene oxide. In this case, we perform more systematic study with different ions. We found that this defunctionalization or deoxygenated swims cased well with deposited energy, electronic energy density for ions with different electronic stopping powers, but it was not the case for damage profile determined from Raman spectroscopy. So this clearly is a result of net effect between ordering of the structures due to removal of these functional groups, which acts as defects, and damaging them in the track course. So for light ions, we were able to order the structure, make it more perfect at intermediate dose, while for heavy ions, we observe only damaged. So we also investigate the transport properties of these materials. So also few order increase in the conductivity, and from the temperature dependence of the resistivity, we elucidated that it well obtained a variable range hopping with a characteristic exponent of 0.5, which is for Efros-Shklovsky variable range hopping mechanism, which assumes vanishing of dose close to Fermi level, and it highlights the localization of the wave functions inside the graphene, small graphene domains. We calculate some other parameters showing that we transform these materials from isolator to semiconductors. few images, IFM images of the irradiated samples. So we record height profiles and lateral force profiles. Some darker spot you can see at the centers of lateral force, or with lower lateral force, which might be due to removal of functional group, but also because of creation of defects or hole inside. We are not sure about the initially about the interpretation, but recently performed experiments with 0.7 GeV bismuth irradiation, so with the highest electronic stopping power we can obtain in our laboratory, confirm that we have formation of nano-sized protrusions with these defunctionalized regions, and there is a hole inside, so clearly damaged zone, what confirm the proposed theoretical model. Finally, for the irradiated graphene oxides, we also find the formation of SP1 hybridized structures, which is also confirming theoretical predictions from molecular dynamics simulation, that we can create holes inside, and there are some carbon chains with SP1 hybridization. And our proposed idealized model for structure obtained with high electronic stopping power is like this. So we have recovered graphene. We would like to have it such perfect and working to have this with some holes at the center. This study were accompanied with FTRR spectroscopy measurements, so for the functionalized materials, striking similarity between Raman and FTRR. But so these compounds are relatively unstable. Most of them, especially polycumulins, are easily decomposed after exposure to air. Probably there is also some incorporation of nitrogen into this structure. So our task and need is for in situ characterization, like in situ ion beam, ion beam with FTIR and Raman spectroscopy, which some such setups were developed in GSI, for example. We are also constantly developing and upgrading our systems, like integrated Raman system with AFM microscope, and recently ordered cryogenic probe station for electrical measurements characterization. So this is basically all, and would like to thanks for our all cooperators and you for your attention. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It was an excellent presentation, however, a bit too long, and you confronted us with that much stuff that I hardly can imagine that anyone was able to follow all the details. But nevertheless, let me ask you whether you have some questions or comments. If not, then let me thank the speaker once again. And let me announce the last contribution of this session that won't be a scientific report, but an information about the international conference Radiobiology Basis on Radiation Therapy. It will be given by Dr. Koshlan.
Okay.
So the floor is yours.
Dear colleagues, I have good news for us because I have a very short report. On 17-18 October, the conference Radiobiological Basis of Radiation Therapy was held in Dubna. The Jinners Laboratory of Radiation Biology was its main organizer. The conference was participated by representatives of leading co-institutes of and organizations, including the National Radiobiological Medical Research Center, Burnazian Federal Medical and Biological Center, Burdenka National Medical Research Center, Institute of Medical and Biological Problems, GIND, and other institutes. The conference aim was to discuss the prospects for the radiation therapy. The main topics of the conference, modern approaches to radiosensitivity control based on new fundamental knowledge, prediction and evaluation of radiation therapy efficiency, radiopharmaceuticals in diagnosing and therapy, evaluation of the long-term consequences of radiation exposure. Altogether, 32 oral and 20 poster reports were made. The conference was attended by prominent scientists and young specialists, and more than 100 participants were registered. Of great interest to the conference participants was a roundtable discussion of the physiological disorders during the radiation therapy of cancer. The main conclusion of this meeting, it is necessary to establish logistics between all interested institutions. As part of the conference, a contest was held between young scientists. All the contest participants got certificates and gifts. Of particular interest was the report of the laboratory scientific director, Evgeny Krasavin. He reported on a new method for treating tumors. The method largely increases the biological effectiveness of therapeutic proton beams and gamma ray facilities and brings the areas of the therapeutic use of proton and carbon ion accelerators significantly closer to each other. A report by Irina Zamulaeva reports on the importance of cancer stem cell research. She drew attention to a significant increase in publication in this field of research. Professor Alexander Chernyaev noted the importance of training a personal reserve. At the conclusion session of the conference have been taken on the conference recommendation. Its main points are presented in following slides. The first slide is to experimental research. The next slide is to general recommendations. The conference participant noted clear progress in the method of malignant tumor treatment. However, it is necessary to obtain new fundamental knowledge of the patterns of the biological action of ionizing radiation and new exposure models. All the participants suggest that the conference of this kind be regular. The conference was widely covered in local mass media. It shows that the issue of radiation therapy is interesting not only to scientists, but also to general public, and the information about conference available site LRB. And thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much. I wonder whether you have questions or comments. As a rule, we don't have questions and comments to reports and conferences. Of course, it was very okay, Boris. Of course.
Well, and how clear were represented the medical doctors and medical centers?
they took part in this conference? And what was the fraction of the participants from the medical side? Because they are the consumer of all this knowledge.
The conference include not only Russian scientists, also include scientists from Italy, from Czech Republic, Slovak Republic, and Mongolia. And medical center in this conference, only Russian 5 center. And we will have two academicians and other specialists of this area.
So no further comments? Yeah, Hartmut, please.
Were there any contacts established between the physicists and the physicians and the doctors? Is there any correlation between both and any interaction?
I said about round table.
Yes, but did you make any decisions then on this round table or just discuss?
Decision, we will have new contacts with our colleagues from other institutes. And now we have contacts from academician Lisica and academician and specialists from Obninsk, Irina Zamulaeva, and other specialists from this institute. And yes, we have contacts with our colleagues.
Thank you so much. Okay, so thank you once again to you and to all contributors of this afternoon. And let me close our session for today, reminding you that we will have a reception here in this house at 7 o'clock. So I think you may stay or go to the hotel or elsewhere and return as you like. See you later.